Welcome to the New Mexico News Podcast, headlines and stories from the land of enchantment. Brought to you by KRQE. Here's Chris McKee and Gabrielle Burkhart.
So Chris, when you first moved here to New Mexico, what was your impression of Central Avenue? Because I remember when you lived downtown and you used to walk to meet us places after work and stuff. What was your first impression of Central?
First impression, I think I lived near the airport when I first moved here, and this was the biggest city that I had lived in. I moved from Eugene, Oregon, which, you know, college town, small, not as many tall buildings, and in Albuquerque as well, you can really see the horizon, right? Because we're in the desert. And then, you know, I guess as I further lived here, I realized just how different each piece of Central really is. But, you know, the downtown part of it felt really interesting because, again, tall buildings coming from a small city. But then I could also tell that there was just a lot of vacancies going on in the downtown core. But I still felt like there was a team of a lot of committed business owners who had really great things to offer for the community that were there. And, you know, you could kind of find little diamonds in the rough. But it also became clear to me that there was a lot of public opinion that felt otherwise. And sometimes that public opinion would come from people who don't even visit the area, who just form that opinion based on what everyone else is saying. It was a lot of mixed impressions, but I would say it still felt like it was on the up and up and that there were a lot of people that really cared about being on Central, the history that it has, and just wanting to make sure that that was a positive experience, you could say, for people.
Yeah, and I think that for sure still exists. There's a lot of different areas of Central, different impressions as well. When I think of Central Avenue in Albuquerque, it's a main drag of Route 66. It's historically been a thoroughfare for travelers. It's a main stretch here for Albuquerque. I think of classic cars cruising on Central on Sundays, lots of good concert venues downtown. There's also Nob Hill, which is very walkable with a lot of shops and restaurants. Central near Old Town is more like the historic plaza.
Right.
And then as you move further east to the International District, it seems like there's less curb appeal along that stretch of Central these days.
Certainly one of the areas that has more of that historical element, right? Just even looking at the signs that have been posted along that, you can really get that old Route 66 feeling there on East Central. We've heard plenty of stories, though, as well, from police and business owners. These are stories that have made it into our newscasts, really, about crime, homelessness, drug problems as well, along with positive stories there, we should say, that do exist along Central. But we've really heard some of those tough stories, you could say, in that area, and particularly in the International District, an area that has been highlighted by city officials as well with a unique set of problems in Albuquerque.
And today we're talking to a longtime business owner from that part of Route 66. He's the co-owner of Southwestern Minerals, Michael Spay. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Michael, we did a story together at your place in August, and I remember you'd emailed me along with city officials to get some attention and some help in the area to clean up, you know, the drug, the homelessness problem that was right outside your doorstep. And we will get into some of those issues more in detail, but first, tell us how long you guys have had this business in Albuquerque. What's the origin story of Southwestern Minerals?
Well, my in-laws started the business actually at Wyoming in Central in 1963. And they purchased the building at Central Louisiana in 1969. So basically, we've been there all that time.
And I wanted to rewind a little bit of it. You heard our kind of take on Central. What's yours?
It's just getting worse and worse, and I feel nothing's getting addressed. I can give you an example. A few weeks ago, there's a guy riding a BMX bike down Central with a backpack yelling, "Blues, blues for sale," and everybody runs from the ART bus stop over to him, and he sells drugs.
You're seeing stuff that is very alarming, obviously.
Very alarming.
When you think back to the history here, you and your wife were kids and our parents owned the place. How do you remember that stretch of Central? What sticks out in your mind?
Oh, what sticks out is my wife telling the story about going out with her wagon on Central Avenue and selling Girl Scout cookies to the businesses along the way, walking or taking her bike to Holy Ghost, which she says she would never do today or allow my grandkids to do. So it was a much better time.
Yeah, ultimately, you know, your store sits right along Central near Louisiana. It's right across facing an ART bus stop. And behind it is an alleyway that you have to use because your warehouse is in the back on the other side of it, right? So there's also a good size yard between your shop and the alleyway that the kids used to play on back there. I remember you showing me some old photos of that. What did it look like back then, if you can paint a visual picture for us?
As far as the backyard of the shop, there was grass, volleyball net. We had many, many large family gatherings there on the weekends. And the alley, the traffic in the alleyway, we did have some people that went from the blue spruce to the turf, you know, but it was nothing like it is today. You know, I mean, back then, at least they tried to kind of hide. And now they just out in the open, they just don't care because they know there's no consequences.
So you have seen a lot of changes on Central over the years. You've seen other businesses nearby. You've seen them come and go. What are some of those main challenges that you and other business owners are up against these days? You alluded to some of those just a few minutes ago.
Well, primarily, you know, it used to be where maybe 1 out of 10 customers came in and said, hey, this area is looking pretty sketchy. And now I would say it's probably 8 out of every 10. And a lot of them just won't come anymore because of the area, because they just flat out are afraid to come.
Yeah, I noticed, you know, when I visited your shop, you started deadbolting the front door, locking it once you let a customer or a client inside. And you're also, you know, checking surveillance cameras to see who is basically on the premises, right? Right outside. What made you start doing that, locking the door, even during business hours?
Well, basically the foot traffic in the area, you know, if I have somebody off the street that wanders in my building, and I tell them, you know, I don't want to buy whatever you're trying to sell, they tend to want to linger. They say, well, I'm going to look around a bit. And you get 2 or 3 of those in there, it's very difficult to construct your business and give your customers the attention they deserve.
Can you elaborate on that? I mean, what makes it so difficult for those, you know, I don't own a business. What makes it so difficult when you're dealing with that kind of stuff?
Well, like I said, for one, it's the safety of your customers. And for two, you know, we've had people just come in, pick something out, merchandise, and just walk out the door. So definitely, you know, if people are trying to sell something that may possibly be stolen, I don't want to be an outlet for that. And I actually don't want them in my store because of the fear that they'll steal from me as well.
And I'm guessing that has happened to you. Have you dealt with theft over the years? And
definitely. Definitely.
What is that impact?
Well, like Walmart and Target, big corporations, they can probably handle a little bit of that. When you're a small family business, you really can't afford to have that loss because you've put your heart and soul and work into handpicking this merchandise. And, you know, we just don't have a loss prevention, you know, contingency plan.
Yeah, it's you and your wife in there who are manning the shop, right?
Correct. Some of the videos that you shared with us for Gabby's investigative story, you know, there were drug users right on your doorstep. It is alarming to see. I know you expressed concern to the city that you're constantly cleaning up foil that's being used to smoke fentanyl, trash, you're cleaning up waste, other stuff. Tell us, what is a normal day like for you running the business? Just say even yesterday before you came in to do this podcast here for us.
Well, it's very common that I open up and they've had a campfire in front of my door, which I'm worried about the building catching fire. And usually there's needles, ashes, human waste, like you mentioned. So I have to start my day basically by cleaning the whole front of the store. And then as the alleyway, as I go back and forth and I'm smelling these drug fumes, I typically will report it to ClickFix, which is 311. And usually they'll say, your issue's closed. You need to call 242 cops. So I call 242 cops once or twice a day to try to clear the alleyway. And they come out and they just scatter the herd. You know, they don't really solve anything. They literally go out of the alley, walk around the front on Central and go right back in the alley because, you know, they have no fear of any consequences. I had people lighting fires up against a building at the end of the alley, and I reported it to the fire department, and they come out and they ask them to put out the fire. And before the fire department's around the corner, the homeless have lit the fire back up again. There's no consequences. They don't care.
And when you call 242 cops, you know, if anyone has done that, we know that's usually the number that you call when it's not a 911 active emergency, right? Is it hard to get people to respond right away? Is there a wait time?
Correct. I typically spend 10 to 15 minutes on hold trying to get an operator. And depending on the operator, I had one the other day that said, we'll send somebody out, and she never even took my information. So now I have to get their number so I can, you know, see who's ignoring me and who's not. And then typically it takes 3 hours average for police to show up and scatter the herd.
And the challenges that you've described, you know, homelessness, an apparent open air drug market in that alleyway, these are things that the city has poured resources into trying to address, right? They had a dedicated team of police officers in the International District. They also have ACS, which stands for Albuquerque Community Safety. That's the city's unarmed emergency response team. And they usually respond to things like encampments, offer resources to people who are on the streets. But you've called for those services a lot. You are, I would say, one of the citizens that I've met through stories and reporting that is what I would describe as diligent. And through public records requests, I actually got copies of some of those phone calls that you've made to the city in the past asking for help. So I'm going to play one of those phone calls now just for some context.
Albuquerque Police Operator 2449, how can I help you?
I've got about 30 people doing fentanyl blocking the alleyway behind my business.
What's the name of your business, sir?
It would be Southwestern Minerals.
We just sent somebody out there, sir.
I can't get through because when I try to drive through, they're holding up sticks like they're going to hit my car, so they must have just came right back. Like I said, I can't even get through the alleyway. There's so many out there. And like I said, they get all combative if you try to drive to my business. I know a guy just came through and passed out sandwiches, but I haven't seen no police.
Yeah, we send our ACS units out there.
Yeah, that didn't work. That didn't work.
So if you could sum up, you know, your experience trying to get the city to help you and other businesses in this stretch of Central out, how would you describe those efforts?
Well, basically, I've reached out to the mayor's office. You know, I've talked to a few different people, came out and basically came in and just gave me the song and dance. Oh, we're working on it. Things are going to get it better. I covered on the art security. They basically just scatter all the people out into the middle of Central. And so I tried to set up a meeting with Tim Keller online, and I filled out all the form, and I basically got no response at all. So I feel like basically my concerns are just being swept under the rug. And we have a new city councilor up there now. I haven't met her, but you know, Pat Davis wouldn't return phone calls either.
Hearing that, you know, the city obviously is putting a lot of efforts into what they think are going to be solutions. Obviously, it sounds like, have you seen anything that you like out of what the city is sort of proposing as things that will help the area?
I do not, because I think the first thing the city needs to realize is we have a drug problem. They're coming out, you know, the drug dealer rolls through on his BMX bike, passes out all the drugs. And then ACS comes out and they pass out sandwiches and then they say, do you want help? They're happy as can be doing their drugs and getting sandwiches. Why would anything change?
What would you like to see happen?
Actually, I think they need to maybe come up with a three strikes and you go to rehab program, you know, and focus more on rehabilitating these people and getting them off drugs, because some of these kids I see out there are high school age. And certainly they're on a path to a destructive lifestyle.
There's a handful of major stores that have closed in that area lately. You know, you've got the Walmart at San Mateo that closed down. It's currently still boarded up. There's an empty Walgreens as well nearby at San Mateo and Central, I believe it is. And then as well, there's a vacant CVS pharmacy that's over there at Central and Louisiana, I think. So it really doesn't seem like this is an area that is getting any more walkable either, as other parts of the city are. And I say that in context to the people who do want to patronize your business. Obviously, there's going to be that other element that will continue to hang out in these places like bus shelters and on sidewalks and the art stations. But, you know, there's also your customers who need to find a place to park and then go in and walk and patronize your business, or if there's somewhere else as well they want to go. How is your customer base? How is that going for you and what you've seen over the years, what it is now, what it used to be?
Well, you know, back in the 80s, they had like 7 employees working at the shop, and they say it was just nonstop all day long. And basically now we're down to the 3 days a week, you know, 2 of us work in there. We still have a lot of the dedicated old time customers that will come, you know, no matter what. And we have some new walk-ins, but like I mentioned earlier, most of them mention, you know, hey, it's pretty sketchy out there, you know?
Yeah. I remember you telling me that some of your customers or clients you'll know when they're coming, right? Like they book appointments and that's like a scheduled thing.
Correct. That's what we're doing now.
Okay. Because you provide basically gems, rocks, minerals. Can you tell us a little bit about your business?
A lot of the jewelers in town do come to us for stones. And even though we're only open the 3 days now, we are there the other days. And if they call us, we'll accommodate them. And we've actually had Harris Jewelers in Rio Rancho, and I'll just take it home and they can come to my house, you know, and we're just trying to, I guess, work around the situation and, you know, just be as helpful as we can to our old time customers.
And you and the cafe nearby, I know you guys were in talks at one point of fencing off that alleyway. I've seen a lot more fencing go up in this area of town lately from other businesses, it seems. And the city says, since it's a public alleyway behind you, you as a small business owner cannot just build a fence around it, right, and block it off from the public. What's the latest with that idea?
Well, the city told me that I could either get a bond, insurance bond, and I could lease it from the city and then I could fence it off, or I can purchase it from the city. But, you know, it's like a couple $1 million bond if I do any of those, which is a small business. I can't do that.
Yeah, it takes a lot of investment. I know I had a colleague once before that did the same thing behind a home of his, and it was quite an ordeal. It took years to figure out a different process, being that it was a home, I think, rather than a business. But does that alleyway provide anything useful for you at this point?
Well, it's how I access, you know, my home and business. That's where I have to drive through. So I really don't have much of a choice. And then also my warehouse being across the alley, I have to go back and forth throughout the day.
On foot, yeah.
On foot. And they're cutting my chain link fences, you know, a couple times a week. I'm repairing fences out there all the time. So yeah, I kind of am forced to be out there.
Because it's where you've been for so long, that's where the investment is, essentially.
That is correct.
I see. So it is a generational shop, as we've talked about a little bit. Do you have a hope that maybe your son or another family member may eventually take over the business? Or do you kind of feel like this would be a really large undertaking to put on someone?
To be honest, my son will not even frequent the area. He will not bring my grandchildren to the area. He has not been to the shop in probably 3 years.
And how does that make you feel?
Well, it makes me feel sad, because at one time, my son and my father-in-law were talking, and there was that high hope of carrying on the family business. And my son was very interested in doing so. And now he's just to the point where the neighborhood has gotten so bad, he's just like, Dad, I just can't do it.
What is your biggest fear for this area and the local businesses nearby who may feel the same struggles as you, but also have, you know, the same hopes of opening a business in the area and providing a service to the community?
Well, basically, I mean, I would hope the area could get better and I could go back to the, you know, days I was open. But the bottom line is, even if we have to vacate the building, the insurance and the property taxes just to have the building there vacant, it's just going to force us to have to sell. Sometimes I think that may be the city's goal, that they just want the area to fall apart so investors can invest in the area and rebuild. I have that suspicion, but I can't really confirm or deny that.
What makes you feel that way? Is it just the idea that there's just larger interests out there and this is, you know, maybe politically how to do this expediently? Is there other indications that you have about why you feel that way?
I've just seen a lot of other places, you know, bought up and then they build apartments. And, you know, I tried to protest my property tax, had to go through a hearing, and they basically said, we don't see a problem here. So too bad.
What do you think needs to happen in this area to change the trajectory?
Well, like I said, I think we need more APD presence in the area. And secondly, I really do think arrests or offers of mandatory, you know, rehab, we need to come up with something else, because what we have is failing.
You know, part of the idea of sending ACS in the community, we've done stories about this, right, is to free up the police who are responding to, you know, active emergencies, but also provide resources to the people who are on the streets. But I know in conversations and experiences I've had with you and the, you know, business owners in that area, you can witness this happening when somebody's on drugs. They maybe not are in their right mind to accept resources or choose any different path for themselves. And you see that as like a growing problem, right?
That's correct.
So we've talked a lot about, you know, the negative things that are happening in this pocket of town. I also want to address some of the positive, because people like you and other business owners, you guys do offer a lot to the community. What is something positive that keeps you and your wife keep coming back each week?
Well, like I said, it's a family business. You know, my wife really has her heart in it. And there's also our longtime customers that we feel some type of dedication. And many of them have spoken out and said, is there anything we can do to help you, you know, stay here? Because we've been coming here, you know, for 20, 30 years. But I think it's my wife still has the passion of the business her parents started, and she just really wants to provide that.
And I know one of your neighboring businesses on one of the weekends that I went to your shop helped you like power wash the sidewalk and stuff. It seems like there's still a community, a good community there.
Correct. Yeah. I've been in touch with a lot of the neighbors. You know, of course, May Cafe closed, but there are a lot of good people and a lot of good businesses in the area. You know, when I report to ClickFix 311, I have a lot of people that come in with their comments, you know, and they feel the same way I do. And I don't want to take away from the APD officers. They've also been great. I've had officers give me their cell phone number, and Mike, if it gets real bad, text me. But they tell me, keep calling 242 cops, because it's the only way we're going to get more manpower in the area. They encourage me to call.
Is there something you wish people would know about the situation you face? Because, you know, it is a unique situation. Not every part of Albuquerque is like this, but the reason why I think in part we all look at this area is because it is historic, because, you know, Albuquerque's roots are along Central, and there's just, you know, the fabric of a lot of what the city, you know, started as goes through Central. And so I think that's why we all look at this area and say, gosh, this is important. We need to do something to address it. But, you know, there is the other side of just putting news out there that people do hear these stories and they just kind of say, yeah, it's always been like that though. Is there anything that you would want to put out there that maybe you're just, I wish people would understand this about the situation here?
Well, you know, I wish people would understand that there are a lot of families in the area and a lot of older businesses like mine that we're just trying to survive right now. And unless the city takes some type of action to help us out, I think eventually, like I said, the whole area will just become a wasteland.
that it could potentially spill out beyond, you know, this pocket of central Louisiana area.
Oh, I definitely think this is going to become a citywide problem eventually. Now is the time to get a handle on it before it spreads, because it's definitely moving citywide.
Well, is there anything else we didn't ask you, Michael, that you'd like to add?
No, I think we covered quite a bit. Like I said, I appreciate your time and the opportunity to do this.
Michael, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your candor with the situation. That's obviously not an easy one to deal with, but appreciate knowing stories like this, because there is always that chance it can help drive more action here as well. And we appreciate you sharing. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks again to Michael Spaeth for taking the time to chat with us more about, you know, just ongoing issues that some of the business owners are having there. We will link to the investigative story that I did with Southwestern Minerals in the show notes. If you want to see some of the visuals that Michael talked about, you can check it out in that story. But certainly a complicated problem, which is why I think, you know, the solution has not been easy to come by.
Some of the things that you see in that story that you showed, the visuals really do paint the picture that shows, you know, Michael is not exaggerating about the issues that he's seeing here. I know sometimes, you know, these types of stories about people who are suffering from addiction, there are examples where people can say, I don't believe you, or you're just being over the top. But certainly the descriptions that Michael has put forth, we really did see, Gabby, you did see when covering that story, you know, his descriptions are very honest. And obviously it's a difficult situation to know exactly how to address. But I think one conclusive thing here is that something different has to be done. The status quo is not working right now.
Yeah. And it makes you feel, you know, for the business owners, for the families dealing with that, and also, you know, for the people who are in that alleyway dealing, you know, with their own issues. So we like to hear from people in this community, share stories, hopefully spark some positive change if possible. If you want to pitch us a story or want to hear from somebody on our podcast, feel free to reach out. I'm gabrielle.burkhardt@krqe.com via email, and gburknm on social media.
And you can catch me at Chris McKee TV or chris.mckee@krqe.com. Thanks for listening.